Hello and welcome to episode 108 of Speak Beastie for March 8th, 2020.
I'm Ariel.
I'm Helene.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Shannon. Hi.
And here we are.
I like that this
and that is us.
I like that this is episode 108 and it's on the 8th of March.
Ooh.
Isn't that fancy?
It's the 3rd of... Oh, duh. It is coming out on the 8th of March. I was really confused for a second. I was like, what are you talking about? Do you know what day it is?
Oh my god!
I never know what day it is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Many times today. I was like, what day is it?
I know what day of the week it is, but...
I didn't even know that when I woke up this morning. I was like... What is time?
So what's new, you guys? What's happening?
Nothing much.
Why don't you take us into the Phoenix Register?
I mean, there's just so much news. Oh gosh, this is gonna be a lot, guys. All right.
Phew.
Just gotta say it. Gotta say the thing. And now for the Phoenix Register.
And now a message from our sponsors.
Hey you! Yes you! The magical cats and dolls waving your wands like bean shooters in a caper. Looking to be on the up and up about Newt Scamander, famous zoologist and world traveler? No need for gossip at the juice joint. Just tune your ears to Speak Beastie. And now for as little as one dragon dollar a month, you can make Speak Beastie the Neasles Meow. Support the show at patreon.com and suddenly you're the big cheese, the real McCoy, with exclusive access to swell sneak peeks, bloopers, and behind the scenes features. But wait, there's more! Sponsors can also beat their gums at the joint with access to the Speak Beastie Common Room on Facebook. Now you're really on the clean sweep, flyboy. Get a wiggle on to patreon.com/speakbeastie to learn more about becoming a sponsor today. It's the Billy Wiggs Knees and how.
So, in news, which we have an abundance of since the movie doesn't come out for another few years, according to Dan and Poppy's Instagram accounts, they are returning for filming for the third movie. Yeah, filming seems to be on and popping, folks.
And that's good.
It's happening. It's very exciting.
I believe I heard that that Callan Turner also was coming.
He
back.
Was actually yeah. confirmed, I think.
Yeah,
that Poppy was just posted this. It was a like a street sign that said Rue de Braziers. And so everybody was like, oh, that means she's coming
Rue de
back.
Bras?
Braziers. Braziers.
Street
well, how
of
do you say that in French?
Isn't it Rosier?
Nobody knows.
I thought so.
I use the pronunciation that Karkaroff used in Goblet of Fire. Because
oh, yeah.
I'm a stupid American.
Rosier.
We should have asked her. Did anybody ask her when we interviewed her?
I don't think so.
I don't think we asked her, but I think she said it.
Opportunity wasted.
Wow, guys. Good job.
Go back and listen to how she pronounced it.
Gotta get her back.
We could just ask Marjo to help us like we always do.
True.
I'm sure she's sick of us by now asking for all sorts of help. Come on, guys.
But this is exciting.
Yeah.
They're filming.
It means things are starting up again, which
might be new.
Yeah. Thank God.
Watch there be news like Sunday
finally.
When the episode comes out, because you know, that's how life happens. Well, yeah. So that's news.
We don't have a little. We don't have a future looking hookah like.
Yeah.
No.
So we can't look into the future.
He only seems to see like bad things, so I don't think if we wanted that, like, if we had that, we wouldn't really want it anyway, because. I don't want to hear bad things about the next film, please. Yeah, so Megan, if you want to take it away with the owl post.
Yeah, I hear the owls coming. So So we got a letter from our dear friend, Sophie. She says, "Hey guys, I have a theory cooking inside my brain for about 2 years now, and I'm finally ready to share, so sit down. It's long and complex. I think that Tina represents the big beasts, namely Frank in movie one and the Zowu in movie two, and by what basically she's basing this on what Newt says about them. So proof for the Thunderbird. Obviously, Tina is a Thunderbird. That's her words, not mine. And Newt says that...
I think Thunderbird is her house.
Okay, cool. Cool. That
makes sense. I was like, what? Okay. Okay. I'm hearing it.
It's her animagus.
And also...
That would be absolutely wild if she was like, a Thunderbird animagus. Man,
why can't that be true?
Yeah, there's a twist we didn't see coming.
Dun, dun, dun.
Other proof for why Tina and the Thunderbird kind of represent each other is Newt says that Frank senses danger. Tina is the only one sensing the danger of Newt right away and of the beast... Obscurus that terrorizes New York having something to do with Credence and Mary Lou. And the evidence for Tina representing the Zowu, I keep pronouncing that different ways because I forget how to say it. Newt says she was born to run but lacks confidence. I mean, that is the perfect description of Tina. Wow. Says Sophie. And Newt first sees the shadow of the Zowu right after he saw the shadow of Tina, and then right after he met Tina again, he captured the Zowu. Oh. In JKR terms, that has to mean something. So my theory is, like I said, Tina represents those beasts, but also that those beasts represent her. Think about it. Dumby sent Newt to New York to find Credence, pretending Newt was there to release Frank. Newt met Tina, and she was his key to Credence. What are the odds that he met exactly the person Dumby needed him to meet? And at the end, Newt is the one, quote-unquote, releasing Tina from her dreadful job and the bad stigma that she had before. The Zowu was then meant to be met by Newt so he could save her, and he only came to Paris because of Tina, so it was the Zowu's destiny. You could say if it wasn't for Frank, he wouldn't have met Tina, and if he hadn't met Tina, then he wouldn't have saved the Zowu. So let's see how this continues in movie 3. Brazil probably has some great big beasts, maybe giant salamanders. Thanks for always being there in these dark, no fantastic beast times. Love, Sophie or Feeny or whatever you want to call me.
I like that.
Giant salamanders. Yeah. I would love just giant salamander eyes staring at me.
Oh my gosh. And he's like, Tina? And it, no, it's an actual salamander.
What if she was a salamander animagus?
That would be cute.
That would be really
cute. I wonder
really
if we'll ever
cute.
Get to see her Patronus. I would love to see her Patronus. Ooh. I wonder if it's a salamander. That would be really cute.
I'd just like to see a little baby salamander just warding off some Dementors.
I think Sophie should just be like official title Tina correspondent.
Yeah, actually.
Yes.
I do like her.
And now a word from our Tina correspondent.
Yeah. I do like her observation, though, that, like, Tina and the Beast storylines are kind of wrapped up in each other a little bit.
Yeah.
Because
I think it makes
those
sense.
Are kind of two storylines that we care about a lot and that we're worried are going to fall to the wayside. So it does make sense that they're both kind of working together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I liked when she not only said, like, kind of what you were saying, Megan, like, how... Sophie was talking about, you know, Tina represents those beasts, but also because, like, her storyline is so intertwined with those beasts with Newt.
Yeah.
Like, it's, and with the Thunderbird, I didn't even think about that, about how that was her house at Ilvermorny, and how, like, it's so representative of her, and, like, you know, her sensing danger, and just, like, her as a person, And then with the Zowu, I always forget how it's pronounced. Is that it?
Yeah, me too. I don't
Zowu?
Know.
Okay. I thought it was. I thought it was Zowu.
Oh, okay. Well. Sorry. Well, with that big beautiful creature,
it's I always a Zowu. Think of
yeah,
a Zowu.
I think about when she first observed Newt with him with the toy, the kind of feathery. Bell toy that he has,
mm-hmm.
and then you see her come back to that and use it herself. And it's like she's, and this isn't anything that Sophie said, but she's adapting to Newt's world. And I think that's, and I love, like, I love it. Cause like you can tell from the first movie, like, she has no idea what these beasts are, what's going on. And
yeah.
And even though they haven't spent a lot of time together, clearly by the second movie, she still is like, oh, this is what I need to do to, you know, figure things out and help Newt out and, you know, save the love of my life. I don't know. I just, she's very different from the first film to the second film. Cause the first film, you know, she's on edge and she doesn't trust anyone. The second one, she's over here with like basically like a cat toy saving like a big beast, you know, like it's just, it's so,
yeah.
I love the growth. I love what they did with her, and just I do want to see her interacting with a beast in the third movie that's kind of reminiscent of her own characteristics and her own arc in the way that Sophie was talking about. So good mm-hmm. good job, Sophie, our Tina correspondent.
Yep, that is all the owls we have for this week.
Bye, owls.
Thanks for stopping by.
All right, on to the main discussion. Are you guys ready for this?
I think so.
Been ready. Okay. Ever since you first brought this up, I was like, let's do it.
It is pretty intriguing, but it's a bit in-depth and it involves a lot of imagination, so stick with me. So this main discussion, I found a new theory about the origin of Credence, aka Aurelius. And so I wanted to kind of dive into it. It has to do with Nicholas Flamel and Dumbledore and the Sorcerer's Stone. But before we kind of get into that, I wanted to kind of recap what some of the other theories surrounding Credence's birth / origin / identity would be. So I have a couple listed here, but I feel like I forgot some. So if I did and you guys remember, definitely chime in, because I couldn't think of all of them. But one of them is that he is Corvus Lestrange. I mean, that's the obvious route that they were trying to get us to believe in Crimes of Grindelwald until the very end. The other is that Kendra and or Percival, I guess it would just be Kendra or Percival, Dumbledore had a secret child that no one knew about. So, like, Percival had a child when he escaped from Azkaban and he had a child that no one knew about. Or Kendra had a child with someone while Percival was in Azkaban or something like that. And then the one that I currently ascribe to until I heard this one, which I'm still not sure which one I am behind yet, but is that Ariana's Obscurus lived on after her death and either A, attached itself to baby Credence, or B, formed itself into a baby, therefore creating Credence. So that he is either a baby that is part of Ariana's Obscurus, or that is a baby that is completely made of Ariana's Obscurus. And this theory is kind of similar to the one that we're going to talk about. But were there any other Credence theories that I forgot that you guys can think of?
I mean, just that, you know, Grindelwald's lying and he's just some random kid.
Yeah.
I don't know which one I believe.
Yeah.
Well, just wait. Listen to this one.
Yes. Let's go.
Okay, so I found this theory. It was a video by the Super Carlin Brothers on YouTube. That's how you say that word. And the theory is basically that Nicholas Flamel and Dumbledore created Credence using the Sorcerer's Stone or Philosopher's Stone. And I know that sounds crazy, but just bear with me.
Those are the ones I love the most.
Yes. So I'm going to try and like kind of go through this in like a very logical way. But obviously if there's something that you want to bring up, thank you. So first, like the first, when I first heard this, the first question that popped into my mind was like, how did Nicholas Flamel and Dumbledore meet, and like, what does their friendship consist of? What did they work on together? Why is Nicholas Flamel in these movies? What is his presence going to mean? Are we going to see anything? And a lot of it really kind of goes back to the stone, if you think about it. So, like, on Dumbledore's chocolate frog card, it says, "Considered by many the greatest wizard of modern times, Dumbledore is particularly famous for his defeat of the dark wizard Grindelwald in 1945, for the discovery of the 12 uses of dragon's blood, and his work on alchemy with his partner Nicholas Flamel." So, obviously, defeat of dark wizard Grindelwald, we're going to see in these series. But how does Nicholas Flamel fit in? Other than the fact that he helped, like, house people. He, like, used his house as a safe house in Paris, so far as what we saw in Crimes of Grindelwald. On the frog card, it says that he is known for his work on alchemy with Nicholas Flamel. And so what do we think that this work on alchemy that they did together was? We know that it wasn't creating the stone, because the stone was created back in the 14th century, and Dumbledore was not alive yet, so he couldn't have helped him create it.
Insert quip about McGonagall.
Right? Just because people aren't alive yet doesn't mean that they can't be there.
It doesn't mean they can't be alchemists. God.
I'm an alchemist, therefore.
I'm immortal.
I'm immortal. Oh my gosh.
Well, when I was doing, like, I did some research on, because the Philosopher's Stone is a myth not only in the Wizarding World, like, area, but it also exists in normal myth. Like, people talk about it. Alchemy is an actual thing in real life. And the creation of the Philosopher's Stone or the Sorcerer's Stone is actually a piece of history. I don't think it actually, I mean, it's not a real thing, but, like, people talk about it as if it's a real thing. So, where was I going with that? Oh, yes. So the creation of the stone in history is, like, the ultimate, it's known as the ultimate goal of alchemy in general. Like, an alchemist's life goal would be to create the substance that does what the stone does. So, since Nicholas Flamel already did that, he already achieved this before him and Dumbledore even met, before Dumbledore was even born, what could the nature of their work on alchemy together have been? Because what else is there to do? I kind of think that it's possible that Dumbledore might have had, like, a special interest in the stone, specifically maybe trying to research it more and figure out what else it could do, because we know what the known properties are, but maybe there's more that he thought that the stone could do.
Yeah, I could definitely see them experimenting with it,
right?
Figure more stuff out.
Science bros.
I mean, like, it's such a, like, it's so weird because the Sorcerer's Stone is literally the, like, name of the first Harry Potter book, but they hardly talk about it.
Yeah.
It's not explored at all. They don't talk about all the things it can do explicitly. They don't talk about what magical possibilities it could have. I mean, it's a big deal, but they don't really go into it. And speaking of, like, the main properties that the stone has, to recap, it can produce the elixir of life, and it has the ability to turn any metal into gold. Those are the two properties.
Yeah.
Known properties of the Sorcerer's Stone.
So there's got to be some unknown properties, or the properties they don't want people to know about.
Exactly. As far as, like, the Elixir of Life, we know it to be something that kept Nicholas Flamel alive for 600 plus years. According to the wiki, it's a potion that is procured from the stone that makes the drinker immortal as long as they consume the potion on a regular basis. But that's not why Voldemort is pursuing it in the first book, because he doesn't need to live forever, because he already will be, because he has Horcruxes. He doesn't need the stone to live forever. And there even is a passage in Half-Blood Prince that talks about how Voldemort refused to rely on the Elixir of Life for his immortality, as he would be required to drink it for eternity, and the possibility of contamination or the stone's loss would result in his death. His strength of independence made it intolerable for him to rely on the elixir to survive, and he only desired it to recreate his body. So that's why he wanted the stone in the first book.
This is just, like, mind-blowing already.
Yeah.
Right?
I'm like, wait.
It is kind of crazy because I've always just accepted that this thing existed and never questioned it. But now I'm like, but how does it work? And like, why? Oh, it's crazy.
And also, when you think about when you see Nicholas Flamel in the state that he's in, you'd think, like, I think I just always assumed it would keep him, even though, like, you know, technically immortal, it would keep him, like, young and healthy. You know, like, I did not expect him to be, like, an old withering man. Like, you know? And so for this theory to be that, it, you know, with Voldemort and, you know, he wanted to recreate his body, to think that it could have some sort of effect on that is just...
Yeah. I just, right. Because, like, if you think about it, Voldemort totally wouldn't want to. He wants to live forever, but he wants to be, like, strong and powerful.
Yeah.
So there's no way that he would want to end up like Nicholas Flamel and living just off of the Elixir of Life. And so, and it like, explicitly says that he wanted to use the stone to recreate his body.
Mm-hmm.
So apparently.
Yeah.
That's something that the stone could do, or at least something that that Voldemort thought the stone could do, would be to create a body, which isn't too far off, because if it can create everlasting life, why can't it create something that, you know, is vital for life, aka a body?
Yeah.
Gosh.
So much already, and we just, like, are at the tip of the iceberg.
Yeah, so if the stone can create a body, that's something that, you know, Dumbledore might be interested in after the death of his sister. Dumbledore doesn't seem to be interested in prolonging his own life. We've never really seen any evidence that he wanted to take the elixir himself, that he ever took the elixir himself, or that he ever even had a desire to live forever. That's not something that Dumbledore ever really seemed interested in, at least that I can remember. Do you guys remember anything like that?
No.
No.
I just remember people being...
I mean, he would have been as a child, as a teen with Grindelwald. Oh, maybe, yeah. But...
Yeah.
I just remember when he was older, people being like, they don't know how old he is.
That would have been before he met Flamel. And
he never explicitly says anything about, like, wanting to live specifically a long life. He wants to live a better life than other people, but he doesn't, like, I don't... remember him saying anything about the duration.
I don't know if this is relevant or off track, but I was just thinking of, like, maybe he never sought that for himself because he knew kind of he could get a little, like, power hungry, because, like, even when I can't remember if it was Harry who'd asked him, like, or somebody, like, why he'd never, you know, taken the job for Minister of Magic, and he, you know, kind of implied he, you know, wouldn't want that much power. So I don't know if it's it's kind of along those same lines. I don't know. It was just like by the time we meet him with Harry, he's a totally different person than I imagine he was when he was working with Flamel, and then especially when he was friends with Grindelwald. Like, it totally different versions of Dumbledore. So, like, maybe initially he kind of got involved, like, learning about the stone when he was friends with Grindy. And then later on in life, he kind of revisited it when it was like, this isn't about me. This isn't anything I want for myself. But who knows? You know, like, I don't know. It's kind of a theory. But there's so many theories. Yeah. Like, just go on.
Well, if you think about it, like, he had this really long, close friendship with Flamel, who was taking the elixir. And he had access to the elixir this entire time. And I don't think he ever took it.
Yeah.
He totally could have. Like, I'm sure that Flamel would have made him some, and he probably could have taken it and stayed young. Not young, but stay alive.
Yeah.
And it's possible that maybe just Dumbledore didn't need it yet, because I think he was just kind of in the older end of the spectrum as far as, like, wizarding age.
Yeah.
He wasn't, like, close to death or anything like that.
He was in the hundreds, though, or it was, like, 120-something when he died, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
I think it was, something like that, like 150 or something. So, yeah, I don't know if, at least I don't believe that he was interested in using the stone for prolonging his own life. But if the stone could create a body, like Voldemort thinks and was pursuing it for, then I can see Dumbledore being interested in using it to create a body for Ariana's Obscurus, because it kind of seems, I mean, we learn in the first Fantastic Beasts movie that it is possible for an Obscurus to exist outside of a human host. We see the one in Newt's case. And so it wouldn't surprise me if Ariana, after Ariana's death, her Obscurus survived after her death, and he wanted to create a host or a body for it in order to somehow bring his sister back. And there comes the stone. Why he would want to use the stone. The other property that the stone has is turning other metals into gold. And as we know or may have forgotten, the name Ariana means silver. And the name Aurelius, which Grindelwald gives to Credence at the end of Crimes of Grindelwald, means gold.
That part just absolutely blows my mind.
Yeah, I'm so shocked we never made that connection before. Like, it's just... because we've gone in depth about people's names and their meanings and everything, and how did we not... that?
Well, see, I definitely thought about the fact that they're both, like, metals. They're both precious metals. Like, I thought about how... like, because I, before I heard this theory, I thought that somehow Ariana's Obscurus was Credence. I always kind of thought that. So I was like, well, it makes sense because, you know, Ariana's silver and Credence is gold. But I didn't make the connection of the Sorcerer's Stone because that is one of its two main properties is to turn, you can turn silver into gold. And literally, if this theory is correct, they used the stone to turn Ariana into Credence. Which is crazy.
I can't decide if I'm going to be excited or mad if this turns out to be right.
I mean, well, I feel like at the point where we are now, it would make way more sense than what we've kind of been theorizing at this point, you know?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like, then being like, but then how, like, what, just, oh my gosh. I'm sorry. I don't want to say anything because there's so much more...
but the thing I keep getting hung up on is, like, if he's not a Dumbledore, then why does the Phoenix come into play? Like, why did... I can't... Okay.
I think that, like, no matter what actually ends up being... like, well, no matter what, like, how we get there, I think that somehow Credence is tied to Ariana. Somehow. Like, I'm not sure how, but, like, that's the only thing that makes sense to me. Their names are so similar. And he has the Phoenix come to him, so it's possible that he is at least somewhat in his core Dumbledore. It's just, like, that's all that makes sense to me. So I could see this. And it would definitely, because I never really understood why they brought Nicholas Flamel into Crimes of Grindelwald. Like, he didn't play a part. Yeah. Like, what was he there for? All I remember is him, like,
comic relief.
All I remember is him, like, shuffling around his house, and, like, punching his wand into the ground at the end. That's, like, all I remember. Like, he doesn't do anything. But if you remember, we get a nice, like, shot of the Sorcerer's Stone.
Yep.
In Crimes of Grindelwald, they make it a point to show it to you, and I mean, it definitely could have been fan service. It could have been like, oh yeah, all you Harry Potter fans remember Nicholas Flamel for this one thing? Here's the one thing, you know?
That's what he's known for.
But hopefully maybe it actually is, like, supposed to be a little hint towards something bigger.
Yeah.
Like, I like to think that Joe is hopefully thinking far ahead. And not just, like, throwing things in there just to, like, be like, oh, look, McGonagall's alive 20 years before she's supposed to be.
She has to be. Like,
it's like throwing darts at random post-it notes and being, like, almost mad-libbing. Like, okay, who can I put in the movie? What time period are they in? And what are they going to be doing?
Like, I'm the first person to admit these days that, like, I have issues with things. But she's still... the best storyteller I've ever known. She's not just gonna throw things in there and not have them mean anything.
Yeah.
Like, I really hope that's true. Like, I believe it to be true, and I really hope it stays true.
Because even with Harry Potter, she plants little seeds. And that's what...
she's so good at it. She's so good at connecting the threads.
And I think that's why we pick everything apart, because we're like, is this a little seed? Is this a big seed? Is this not a seed at all? Like,
she trained us to pick everything apart.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So even with the names here and now, it's like, oh my gosh, like, what does it mean?
Right?
And like you said, even with Flamel, like, what was he doing there? And the knowing, like, the... because I know there's a lot of people who watch Fantastic Beasts who weren't big on Harry Potter. Like, they could have shown Flamel opening the book and speaking to Eulalie, and then, oh, there's the Philosopher's Stone in the background, but they didn't do, like, it was, they panned on it, you know? Mm-hmm. It had to have been something other than just fan service.
I want to believe it. I really, and, like, this just makes, like, way too much sense in terms of, like, creating life. Everything everything that just happened with Ariana and her death before the Fantastic Beasts movies started, you know, all of this, the timeline just happens to line up so well with everything that, and we know literally nothing in canon or in any like extra textual materials, Pottermore, the wiki, anything like that. We have been given no information in terms of what the actual work that Nicholas Flamel and Dumbledore did. And it had to have been something big enough to be noted on his chocolate frog card as one of his life achievements.
Yeah.
Wow. Those chocolate frog cards don't lie.
I mean, it's up there with defeating Grindelwald and creating 12 uses of dragon blood. So, I mean, it has to be something.
Dumbledore even says that his favorite, like, notoriety is the fact that he has a chocolate frog card.
Yeah.
Like, even that's got to be kind of pointing us towards that. If it doesn't have anything to do with the 12 uses of dragon's blood, then it has to be about Nicholas Flamel.
Yes. Has to mean something.
I know.
All of it.
Yeah. Well, like any good theory, there are definitely some holes that don't fully add up. Hopefully they will be answered in the future films, or they could just, you know, be pointing to the fact that the theory isn't true. Which I guess is a possibility, but whatever.
No.
Like, for example, like, so say that Dumbledore and Flamel created Credence. They have this baby boy that they've created. Like, what are they, now what? You know, like, what happened after that? Because somehow Grindelwald knows he exists. Somehow he knows his name is Aurelius. And somehow Credence ends up on a boat to America and living in an orphanage at 16. And Dumbledore is not doing anything about it. Except, oh, I mean, he sends Newt, but you would think that, like, he would do, like, he created this freaking human baby. And
it's all very Frankenstein and Frankenstein's monster. Like, I created you, now go off. Go live your life.
Yeah. Like, especially if he thinks of her, like, thinks of Credence as his sister in some form. Like, you would think he would do something other than...
This is making my brain go into weird places. But, like,
oh, gosh.
What if, like, why would they turn his sister into, like, a boy? Like, unless...
I don't think that they could... I mean, I'm just gonna...
Maybe they didn't have control of it.
Unless they were...
It was probably out of their hands.
They were trying to resurrect Ariana and somehow did it weirdly or... Something went wrong and they ended up with a 16-year-old boy instead. They were just like, what are we doing?
The math was all wrong.
And then that makes me think of the weird trans tweets that JKR has done recently, and like the whole thing is just making my brain implode a little bit. It's fine.
Yeah. I mean, I have to believe that they didn't mean to make a boy. I think that that was probably like something that just happened.
Isn't that weird to think, like, if this theory holds any weight, like if it's all true, just to go back to Voldemort. So what would that have meant for him to create a new body? He would have just...
Do you get to choose the gender of your new body? Yeah. Or is it just a luck of the draw?
It's have like, a gender it's reveal like the party. Sims. He's like it's creating a sim.
I mean, you don't get to choose the gender of your existing body, so I would assume it's the same.
That's true, yeah.
So it's just like, well...
50-50 shot.
Yeah. Interesting.
So this whole trans issue might be...
Voldemort could have been
actually
a girl.
Canonically way more relevant than we realized.
Yeah.
If Voldemort had gotten his hands on the Sorcerer's Stone and created his own body... There was a shot that he could have been a girl for the rest of the series.
Voldina.
That would have... Voldina.
Lady Voldemort.
He would have done some sort of, like how he did with, you know, Tom Marvolo Riddle. He would have done that for a girl, I'm sure.
Mix it up again for a girl name.
I am Lady Voldemort, I don't know.
Because, you know, all women walk around going, I am Lady...
Well, he called himself Lady Megan. Which is like, come on, dude, really?
I'm just teasing.
And all women have A's at the end of their names.
Yeah. Lady Voldemort.
That sounds pretty good, actually.
Or he could have been like Lord the Singer, just add E to the end of Lord. I am Lord.
Oh my god.
I dropped the Voldemort. Yeah. Just Lord now. I've won That's Grammys. Nice. Look me up.
Oh my god.
I've never seen a diamond in the flesh. Sorry, no.
Well, no, honestly, I mean, though, I can't think of any other reason why they would, like, do that. Like, if we're going with this theory that Dumbledore and Flamel created Credence out of Ariana. Like, the only reason why they would do that is if they were actually trying to bring Ariana back.
Yeah.
And it didn't work.
Like, how many bodies do you think they created before? Like, you know, like, what if this was just, like, the first go-round?
And then he, like...
And they were like, oh, well, I guess...
He ended up with a body again.
Yeah, but I mean, where did Voldemort get the idea that it could even create a body? Maybe there is past evidence that... It has happened before. Maybe Credence is the best evidence.
Also, what happened when, like, they sort of killed Credence, but didn't quite? Like, how did he wind up being back with the same body?
Man, that is a whole entire question.
He performed his own body at that point. That's kind of crazy. Maybe he has, like, a piece of the stone
in him.
Oh my gosh. I just always thought somehow it was like he had gained so much control over the Obscurus. Because, like, when you watch him in the first film, when Gravesolwald is like, you see him like kind of like physically being torn apart, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, he really
kind of hulking out.
His body doesn't like stay together when he goes full. Yeah. Obscurus. So maybe it's possible that just like when they cast to kill him because he wasn't like
a little piece
fully formed as a body, it didn't work.
Yeah, man. I'm tired. This is hurting my head. In a good way. I just mean like there's so many questions.
Right.
And all this, I thought this theory would be like, I mean, I know there's more to say about it, but it's just like you think, oh, this could possibly answer a bunch of things, but then we're sitting here and we're asking even more questions because, like, wait, but what about this thing? And it's like, oh my gosh, you're right. What about this thing?
I will say it'll be really awesome if, like, J.K. Rowling, you know, is transphobic but accidentally writes a very nice trans story about this nice boy Credence.
Yes.
I just think he's neat.
He's a
neat guy.
He is a neat guy.
Neat.
Did you get my Friends reference?
I did.
Thank you.
I got that, man. I was watching that episode the other
day. I'm a love machine.
I too am a neat guy.
Oh god.
Well, are we ready to open the newt case? Are we done with main discussion?
Yeah, that's
as done as we'll ever be. I will still be thinking about this when I'm laying in bed tonight.
Honestly, you know. The bit of this that's the most, like, definitive proof to me is their names, Felix Silver.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's all I got on it, because it's still very, like okay, these things could lead to this. This makes a lot of sense. We don't know enough about this, but it all just kind of seems to somewhat explain itself, and... Yeah, like Shannon said, the names are crazy. The fact that they literally, like, match up with what the stone can do. So, there's still a lot of questions. I think that's what theories do. I think they leave you with more questions than answers. But they kind of can explain little things that kind of, like, click in your mind. You're like, oh, well, it could be this. I could see this happening. And just the way that, like, we know how J.K. Rowling thinks.
Yeah.
That, like, I could see
her
doing this.
She likes those names. I mean, listen, she named the werewolf Remus Lupin.
This is very true.
And then we still all got to the end of Prisoner of Azkaban and we're like, Oh boy. All right, let's dive moon right moon. Into the Newt case.
Moon Moon.
I love him. So we've got something a little spooky in the case today. It's our friends the Thestrals. Interestingly enough, Thestrals are not in the Fantastic Beasts book.
What?
Which I thought was kind of weird.
That is weird.
That is so weird. They're my favorite.
No, Newt has seen death.
Yeah, you know, I'm starting to think that maybe the Fantastic Beasts book that we have access to is the children's version.
Yeah.
Like, there's some scary beasts in there, but it's like, oh, but you're never gonna see a Leatherfold. It's just kind of spooky. Yeah. But Thestrals,
they're on campus.
Yeah, they're there. But according to Umbridge, in Order of the Phoenix, the Ministry has classified them as dangerous, which would put them at an XXXX classification.
That's many X's.
Is a lot of X's. Hold on, let me double check. That is...
But they're gentle.
The second highest. Dangerous, requires specialist knowledge, and a skilled wizard may handle. Or Hagrid.
He's a skilled wizard.
On the wiki page, the Harry Potter wiki, it somewhere was like, skilled wizards, parentheses, or Rubius Hagrid.
That's some shade.
It's like, nice. Wow. So they're not...
I would consider like Rubius Hagrid a skilled wizard.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what, he is. But it's interesting, they're classified as dangerous, but we never really see them do anything dangerous. I think they definitely require specialist knowledge.
Yeah, and a skilled wizard. They're sweet, gentle creatures.
Yeah.
Because sometimes you can't see them.
I guess that's why they're kind of dangerous.
That would be the dangerous part.
Well, maybe that's the misconception of them. Like, people think that they're scary, but
and I mean,
really,
if you can see them, they are scary.
Yeah, I was gonna say, I don't know if that helps.
And you are seeing them because you saw someone die.
Horses
so,
with
like...
wings.
But yeah, we're introduced to them in Order of the Phoenix, because Harry can see them at that point after seeing Cedric die. But you have to
cool.
Like, so it's, yeah, it's visible only to those who have witnessed and like processed the death. So Harry saw Cedric die, and then by the next year had kind of processed it a bit more, so then he could see them. Luna could see them because she saw her mom die, and she kind of explains them to Harry. They pull the carriages at Hogwarts, which is kind of crazy, but okay. So here's
Why
how they're
not?
Right? Here's how they're described in the book. If he had to give them a name, he supposed he would have called them horses, though there was something reptilian about them too. They were completely fleshless, their black coats clinging to their skeletons, of which every bone was visible. Their heads were dragonish, and their pupilless eyes white and staring. Wings sprouted from each wither, vast black leathery wings that looked as though they ought to belong to giant bats. Standing still and quiet in the gathering gloom, the creatures looked eerie and sinister. And I will say that, like, this is
Thestrals.
A beast... Right? This is a beast that, like, the movies got right.
They did it so well.
Like, that's what they look like.
When I first saw them, I was like, yeah, that's a Thestral. That is exactly what they said in the book.
And I think the movies also just did a really good job of making them look super creepy, but also showing them as, like, actually very gentle, you know, calm creatures.
I was very, very excited to see them in Crimes of Grindelwald. Like, when they showed up in Crimes of Grindelwald, pulling that carriage at the beginning, I was all for it. I was so excited. They're like some of the coolest creatures, I think. Oh, I love them.
They're really interesting. So I was trying to figure out if they were kind of based on any, you know, real, quote unquote, real mythical creatures, but they are apparently not. Because so many of these beasts are like, oh, this is a real mythical creature. It's based on this creature or whatever. Mm-hmm. But Thestrals are not, as far as I could find. Wizards consider them unlucky, because, I mean, you can see them if you've seen death. Like, which probably means you've had some difficult luck.
It's kind of similar to the augury, right? Because they are considered unlucky because their cries are supposed to be an omen for death. And then, of course, they find out later that they're just an omen for, like, rain and not actual death.
Yeah.
But, like, people see them as an omen or, like, unlucky because their, like, existence is related to death in some way.
Yeah.
It's just, like, what a weird caveat as a, right? an existing thing. Like, you're here and you're alive, but people can only see if they've witnessed and processed death. Like,
yeah,
that's poor them. Like, they must be so lonely most of the time. Like, no wonder, like, when you see them with interacting with Luna in the movies, it's, you know, she's feeding them and they're, like, cute and kind of, you know, like, oh, like, just, they're just babies.
Like, I like to think that they're, I like to think that they're nice to the people who can see them because, like, they know that they, that human has to have gone through something. Yeah. That human has to have really, like, gone, like, have PTSD in order to be able to see them.
Yeah.
So they're like, I'll be kind to this human.
Yeah. They are, carnivorous and supposedly, who says it? Go after birds. I think, like, Umbridge refers to that or something. So, I mean, I can also see, like, oh, people have seen, like, an invisible creature eat a bird out of the air and been like, oh,
where'd that bird go?
grubbly plank.
Yes, yes, that's it. Mm. That makes more sense. She says it. I think they're also very kind of easy to connect to Dementors, which are also a thing that, like, is not from any real life myth, and kind of Dementors are a much more metaphor for depression, but Thestrals kind of reflect it to the more specific, like, what you go through after seeing someone
die. I feel like they're like a stage of grief.
Yeah. And, like, we only associate them with good characters who have seen people die, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, okay, Voldemort would be able to see Thestrals, but
because he's murdered people.
Yeah, and he wouldn't
seen
care.
And processed death.
Yes.
Does he process it though?
Process.
Well, I mean, in like when way, I say process, I mean like that was Joe's way going around. Like, well, Harry should have been able to see them since birth. So it's like, I mean, like he's processed in a way that he was like, that was death.
Like, well, it's like
that was death.
Well, that's, I think it's like, oh, Harry was like in his crib when his mom died, but also when you're a baby, like, you don't know what's going on. And then he was unconscious when by the time Quirrell actually died. Those are the other ones that people bring up.
And I think the fact that she says that he has to have like processed it also, like, it's her backtracking, because he saw Cedric die but didn't see them at the end of year four.
At
he didn't
the
see them until the beginning of year five. So I think that that was a mistake on her part, honestly. Yes. She was like, oh, yeah, he, like, had to take time to process it.
But I think that that, you know, works.
Yeah.
Talking about, like, names, the name Thestral comes from the Middle English word thester, which means dark and gloomy. Aww. And the suffix al means pertaining to, so pertaining to the dark and gloomy. The first Thestral born at Hogwarts was named Tenebris, which is a word that also means, like, dark and gloomy, right? So they're, like, all descended from Tenebris. And they are a possible corporeal Patronus form, which is pretty bad.
That would be the coolest thing ever.
I would love
and
that.
And imagine, like, oh my gosh. Because, like, just, they're already so, like, cool and creepy, like, running off a Dementor for, like, just, yes. I would feel like the coolest person alive.
It would be so cool to have that as my Patronus, honestly.
Yeah.
Some people that we know could see Thestrals. Hagrid, which, I mean, he was taking care of them. So, presumably, he saw his father die.
Hmm.
Or maybe, you know, something in the first war, but his father died when he was younger, so I think that would make sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Neville can see them. Because he saw his grandfather die. Luna can see them because she saw her mother die. Theodore Knott is another student who could see them. And I guess it's not, like, confirmed who he saw die, but this, on Harry Potter Wiki, it says possibly his mother. Harry can see them, obviously. Kingsley can see them, presumably, because he rode a Thestral during the Battle of the Seven Potters.
True.
And he's
an
Auror.
And I would just imagine his line of work would lead him to seeing people die.
But Fleur couldn't see it, right? Because even though she flew it, was she just flying on something invisible?
No, I think it was someone else who was saying that.
I thought it was...
Kingsley and Fleur were paired up at the Battle of Seven Potters on Thestrals.
Well, because this says Fleur chose to ride a Thestral with Bill.
I thought Bill and Fleur were paired up. But she did ride a Thestral, so I'm wondering if she saw someone or if it was...
So she and Bill rode a Thestral together, so it's possible that one or both of them could see them. No, I think it's like one of the other Seven Potters who rides with Kingsley can't see it.
And it's Hermione.
Yes.
Oh.
Snape can presumably see them just because of being in the wars.
Mm-hmm.
Because Dumbledore asks him at one point, how many people have you watched die lately? Which is so dark. Jeez.
Yeah.
So.
On a more depressing note, I bet every single person at the Battle of Hogwarts could see them after.
Oh, that's on this list too.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It just says most participants in the Battle of Hogwarts.
Like, well, not going to go down that list.
Yeah.
But yeah, they're pretty cool creatures. You know, they live in herds, which is kind of cool.
I was going to say, with Moody, we know he can see a boggart with his magical eye.
I wonder if,
because I mean, he has likely seen death, but I wonder if he would have been able to see Thestrals with his magical eye if he had not, you know?
Ooh, maybe. That would have been cool.
That's interesting.
I'm wondering if, like, when you say that you have to, like, have seen and processed death, does it have to be human death? Like, if I...
That's what I was thinking. If
I saw an animal die, does that count? Like, I don't, like, does it have to be human death?
I saw a plant die? No.
Like, if I killed a mosquito?
I killed a spider? Yeah.
Does that mean I could see a Thestral?
I would, maybe depending on, like, how you processed it, I guess.
Like, if you watch, like, your pet die or something.
Yeah, if your family pet died.
That's interesting.
And, like, you would process that like a human death, almost. Like,
yeah.
Maybe.
I feel like 100%. I've probably processed those deaths more than some humans' deaths. Not to sound like a horrible person, but, like,
I feel it.
Yeah, like,
and
people downplay the human-pet relationship.
Oh, yeah, no, it's totally, like, I feel like that's the same type of processing. But if you think about it, everybody in, like, the healthcare profession probably can see them. Like, doctors, nurses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to step out of the newt case. So that's it for the newt case. And we're going to wrap up the podcast. But first, Ariel's got to talk to us.
I just wanted to say, they are a neat guy.
Yeah. Thestrals are neat guys. Oh, goodness. Okay. So, hi, everyone. Well, if you've been with Speak Beastie from the beginning, you'll know that pretty much started off with me, Shannon, and Aaron as the OG3. And then... lucky me, I got to be the one to read Aaron's goodbye. And I honestly never thought, I mean, not like never, but like, you know, I don't know. I guess you just always think there's going to be one more time. Yeah, so I've been doing this for 4.5 years now. Lots of things have happened in that time. I mean, lots of cool opportunities. I've met so many amazing people. I love all the conversations I've gotten to have with all of you. And, you know, the people I've gotten to meet at events and everything. And I don't know if a lot of people know this, but I actually named the podcast. My name is the one that y'all chose from. I think we had a few options, but this podcast means the world to me. So that's,
We were trying to pick a name, and I remember saying my friend, like, everyone's picking this stupid Speak Beastie name, but it's kind of growing on me.
Well, because I was like, oh, it's like 19.
I didn't have a better one, so.
And it's like,
I was going to say, do you remember what your option was?
No.
I was like, it's like speakeasy, but like, we're speaking about beasts. And, like, I was really in depth with it. You can ask Steven, like, I was like, what about this? And he's like, this one's good. And it was just... I mean, this thing has meant a lot to me for a lot of years, and it still does, so I don't want y'all to think it doesn't, but y'all know I have health issues, and I'm trying to juggle life and health and my jobs, and this is just a long-winded way of saying that this is my last episode for a long time, the foreseeable future. I'm okay. I did almost die before
you
this.
You sound okay.
before this episode, but I don't want anyone to worry that like my health is like getting worse or anything. Like I don't want like when I say my health, I just mean like it's a balancing act, and sometimes Speak Beastie has fallen by the wayside as a result, and I just don't want to be, you know, I don't want to let myself down anymore. I don't want to let anyone else down anymore. But you know, once the third movie comes out, if y'all ever want to have me back on, I would love to. No. I'd love to make random appearances. Shannon, you stop it.
Pass.
But thanks, guys. You make me feel so loved. This is really, this is hard, but I'm still going to be in the common room. I'm still going to be around. I'm still going to support the show and listen and be cheering y'all on the sidelines and theorizing and getting excited for the new trailers and news everything. And, you know,
yeah.
Now
yeah.
you can't say the Phoenix Register without saying it the way I said it all these years. So
I thought you were going to start crying when you entered the Phoenix Register.
I almost did. There's been so many points this whole episode when I've wanted to cry because I'm like,
oh, Ariel.
Even when you were clapping, I was like, this is the last time I'm going to do
it. Oh, my God. Ooh,
I'm sentimental sorry. Clapping.
Ooh, goodness.
We love you, Ariel.
It's not going to be the last time. You'll
know,
be back.
It just feels like it. Well, I just first want to say thank y'all for this episode. This has been such a fun way to end things. And secondly, I want to thank all the listeners for always just being so, sorry, for just always being so kind and so loving and so amazing, because I know I'm a blooper-filled mess most episodes, so I appreciate y'all embracing that rather than mocking it. And again, I'm going to be in the common room. I'm not going anywhere. Anytime you see anything Sasquatch, you know, send it my way. I want to see it. But, you know, it's goodbye for now.
It's going to be yes. a less fun show without you.
Don't say that.
Whew. I don't like any of these other people. Don't tell
them. I've done like 90% of my episodes with you.
Yeah. I feel like we exclusively record lately.
Almost every episode I've done for this podcast, you've been on it as well.
Yeah. It's like lately, it's like I only record with Helene and like whoever else. Like it's never like she's on it most of the time. But you know what? I'm glad at least I got to be part of the 100th episode. Like
I'm going to call Helene Ariel OMG. From now on. You're Ariel now.
The new Ariel.
I will take that on with pride.
Expect a K-pop remix of your noises.
Oh my God. We need a new K-pop remix.
No sounds from this episode because it's a lot of crying and sniffling and stuff. But, you know.
That was pretty heartfelt. And lovely.
Yeah. You know me.
You're gonna have people like
cry about something.
You're gonna have people like crying on the bus and like crying at work.
Yeah.
Good. No.
Someone is sitting just trying to innocently work right now at their desk and they're being forced to like choke back tears.
No, you know
it's
how
all
sometimes
your fault.
People are like, oh, I've had a rough week. I've been looking forward to this episode all week and it's really gonna perk me up. I'm like, I swear if anybody says that about this episode and like they like me
that's
or whatever,
what you thought.
I'm so sorry.
you'll be the catharsis that they needed. Everybody needs a good cry every once in a while.
That's true.
I've had a quite a few good cries today, so oh gosh, I should be done for like the month, but I know I'm not.
It's 2020. There's plenty to cry about.
Oh, yeah. Oh gosh.
It's Super Tuesday. You'll probably cry tomorrow.
No, please don't say that. Oh, yeah. Happy cry. Happy cry tomorrow.
Hey, listeners, if you haven't voted yet because, you know, your primary hasn't come out and you're in America, go vote.
So, for this week's podcast question, we want to know what your favorite Credence origin theory is. We'd love to hear from you, so drop us an L on any of our social media outlets or email us at speakbeastie@gmail.com. Also, you can leave us a review on iTunes while you're at it.
And if you enjoyed this episode and you want to follow us on social media, you can find us on Twitter and Instagram at SpeakBeastie, Facebook at facebook.com/SpeakBeastie, Tumblr at speakbeastiepodcast.tumblr.com, and you can also support the show on Patreon at patreon.com/SpeakBeastie. I'm Helene.
I'm Megan.
I'm Shannon. And I'm Ariel. Case closed.